Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to DC's Black and White No Gray Zone on eWater Radio, KEWRDB. I tell you, technically, this whole thing is funny, but I'm going to go ahead and roll with it. And, you know, last week was kind of a tearjerker because I was telling my story, so I decided to come correct this week with a couple of funny stories from my teenage years. But also, I have to start out by saying, one, I want to say happy birthday to Jolene. Her birthday is this week. And happy birthday out there, Wisconsin. Try to stay warm. Two, I have a young man who's been in my life for about 5 or 6 years. He's a real good dude. He's trying to get his rap career off the ground. And you never know who's listening. So you can download his music at unitedmasters.com. His stage name is Divine Swervin, S-W-E-R-V-I-N. And to me, I think he's just going to be the next Eminem. You know, you just sometimes you need the right person to hear you at the right moment in your career. Don't give up. Keep pushing. Your dream will come true, bro. All right. So I have to start the show by talking about Fury versus Wilder 2 last night. I mean, Wilder talks so much stuff about how he's the biggest, the baddest, the strongest. He's going to knock everybody out, blah, blah, blah. And in the first fight, it went to a unanimous decision. This is his second fight. And it was really entertaining because I'm a huge boxing fan. My dad, my middle name is named after a boxer. So I was raised in boxing, basically. And it's really hard to see people like Mayweather, Wilder, and anybody else compare themselves to Muhammad Ali. You know, say they're the best. When Muhammad Ali did it, he was. And I'm not trying to get nostalgic, not trying to go far back. But it's bouts like last night that prove you are not as good as you think you are. No one goes through a whole career of not being knocked out, unless you're Mayweather. And the reason Mayweather, he picks his opponents. He doesn't go for the people at the height of their career. He also gives him his respect. He's a defensive specialist. I will give him that. But Wilder got his ass murked and smoked last night. I mean, he got beat up so bad. I don't think I've seen a beating like that since slavery times. That's a bad joke, right? That's a bad joke. I know. That was bad, though. I mean, like, seriously, he was bleeding out his ear, bleeding out his mouth. I think his left jaw was swollen. And I've been looking for a post-interview to see what he looked like afterward because he was just a mess. There was a rumor that his corner man threw in the towel. I saw the referee step in. It looked like a straight stoppage the way they do. But it was really, really fun to see this doughboy-looking white boy get up there, shut this brother's mouth. And usually I'm that man that's behind my people all the time. But there's just some people in our life, in our lifetime, that just are obnoxious and just you can't stand them and you just want to see them lose sometimes. Just sometimes. Not all the time, just sometimes. Anyway, so these two stories that I have tonight. One is, okay, so let me say this. Let me preface it by saying this. If any parent has a teenager in the room, you might want to bring them in to listen to this, to these two stories. Because as I did last week, I'm going to bare my soul and it's going to show you how stupid young men can be. Okay? I mean, just how dumb, make the wrong decisions, and, you know, one of these stories, I could have caught a case, you know what I mean? statute of limitations is up, so I can talk about it. But over 30 years ago, so I'm good with that. But I'm gonna, this is a quick story. This one, the first one is, I was a virgin, didn't lose my virginity until I was 16 and a half, and the girl I lost my virginity with, she was a virgin also. And now before that, I kind of felt like I got a lot of love from women. I was more of a flirt, but I couldn't pull it all together. It just verbally, I couldn't do it. I just wasn't as smooth as some would say I am today, which I'm not smooth. I'm ragtag, like up, down, you know, no game at all. But I had to laugh just because I could see some people. Never mind, I won't go there. But anyway, so girl, we do the deed, and a few weeks goes by, and I start noticing in school that girls are giving me like a level of play that I wasn't getting before, and I'm not understanding what's going on. And so I get the bright idea. Now remember, I have to say this. I'm 16, okay? I don't want to get text messages and, oh my God, you're so horrible for something I did, what, almost 32 years ago? Seriously? I recognize this is not how young men should handle problems or deal with issues. With that said, I will continue the story. So I thought to myself, I was like, well, maybe I should get out there and, you know, exercise my loins, but I can't cheat on my girlfriend. You know, that's the thing that was in my mind. My mom's in the back of my head, don't ever do that, don't ever do that. Okay. So I go ahead and I decide I'm going to break up with my girlfriend. And women, even to this day, they say all they want is honesty. Come on, but let's just be real. Y'all women don't want honesty. Y'all want what works good for your ears. What's good being received on your ears. That's what y'all want. Y'all don't want honesty. And right now, I'm not personalizing anything. So again, I don't want to get a bunch of text messages. I'm just saying, some people out there are so tender, even at the ripe old age of in their 40s and 50s, which makes me scratch my head, but okay, whatever. I mean, you expect it from a teenage girl, but Jesus, anyway. I understand no one wants their feelings hurt. I get that. And in my rational 16-year-old mind, I thought, I'm going to write a note to my girlfriend, and I'm going to break up with her in a note. And, okay, so we went to art class, and she's sitting, her last name started with B, and there was a white dude in between me and her. Her and I. And so I asked the white dude, I said, hey, pass this to, I won't use her name, let's call her Sally Sue. Pass this to Sally Sue. And he goes, oh, okay. And this is kind of visual, so try to picture this, please, anyone that's listening. When she gets this note, she's receiving a note from her boyfriend. And it's kind of wordy, you know what I mean? So she gets this ultra excited look on her face. And I'm like, I'm looking at her, get excited. I'm like, no, it's not that kind of note. You know what I mean? Teacher acknowledges I'm talking, be quiet. I'm like, okay. So I'm sitting there. And from the time she started reading, probably every 10 seconds, her facial expression changed. First, it was elation and gleeful. And then it went to, wait, what am I reading here? And then it went to, oh, wait a minute, this isn't really happening. To then, tears rolling down the side of her face. And when she started crying, I BS you not. Remember, I'm 16, people, please. I've already beat myself up over this so many times, okay? I whisper past the white guy between us. I say, did you read the part where we could still be friends? Oh my God. She starts crying. Which in the note I wrote, I would still like to be friends with you. I just don't want to cheat on you. I don't want to have sex with other girls. I literally told her the truth. And that did not go over well at all. well, whatever. So she gets up and just leaves the classroom without permission from the teacher or anything. And I'm scratching my head, and I'm going, oh, my God. And she's, you know, she's crying. And so finally I asked the teacher, I go, can I use the hall pass? And so I try to find Sally Sue, in the school. I hear this boo-hoo crying, echoing. So I realize she's inside one of the buildings. And so I run to the building where I hear it. She's in the bathroom. So now, you know, and this is between class. So finally, there's anybody walking the hallway. So I crack the door. This is the girl's bathroom. I crack the door. And I go, Sally Sue, are you okay? And her response was less than loving. She didn't respond like a woman who wanted to hear the truth. You know what I mean? And to this day, I still don't understand what her problem was. I'm joking. Jesus, I got it. I don't want to receive. Anyway, a bunch of text messages. But this is the mind of a 16-year-old dopey guy who's never dealt with women before. And I've been raised by my mother who says, don't lie to women. Don't do this. Don't do that. So I ran by her rules. And I end up, this whole situation blows up in my face. Okay, so needless to say, after that day, for the rest of the school year, she never looked at me again. She never spoke to me again. You would have thought she caught me in bed with her mother. I mean, I was just like, yo, why am I the bad guy? Like, I said I didn't want to cheat on you. I was being honest with you. I want to have sex with the girls. Like, what is the problem? Women say they want honesty. My mother told me to be honest. What the hell is going on? You understand, looking at it from a male standpoint, why women are so, I want to use explicit right now, but so confusing. So anyway, I've been through some things that was a story that popped in my head, and I said, you know what, I need to let people know. And again, if you have teenage kids, preferably boys, and they're listening to this, they're going, ooh, yeah, homie, I wouldn't do that. yeah, you wouldn't right now because you've heard my story, or, you know, you've had a talk about how to deal with your girlfriends. I mean, I don't even want to talk about the sexual talk. My mother sat me down at 12 years old and sat me down, and I, you know, looking into the future, it wasn't another four and a half years until I lost my virginity. But at 12, my mother wanted to tell me about the birds and the bees. And when my mother gave me a talk, now mind you, I had my grandfather, my dad, my uncle. There were men in my life that could have sat me down and talked to me about this. The most uncomfortable talk I've ever had in my entire life. And if you can't tell, I'm kind of a vocal type of guy. It was uncomfortable on several different levels. Because not only did my mother have the talk with me, but she was step by step. Okay, I got to keep this PG. So let me figure out how to say this. Okay, I'll talk around things. It was, don't just do this. Caress, feel, massage. Yeah, you know, okay, and we're talking about anything on the body, okay? Just, it was explicit, and I was like, by the time that talk was done, my penis had like crawled inside me and was poking out my ass, poking out my boat hole, trying to get away. I mean, I was so just shaken by this talk that basically my mother made me a virgin for another 4.5 years, I guess. But I mean, my mother did what she thought was right. So I'm not throwing stones at her, but it is one of the funniest talks because I had the talk with my daughter, and I told her about how, you know, dudes will say anything to get you, you know, spread their legs. And one of the things I never said was I love you to a woman, and I pride myself on that. I know women are thinking, yeah, that's not a big deal, but it really is because there's a lot of guys that do that. You know, and there's a lot of women that are receptive to those words. It's like, you know, a can opener. The legs just fly open, you know. Anyway, so that's that story. Now this one is, man, I'm so not proud of this. This story, I was 17, and Jesus, man, I look back at it and I can't even understand what I was thinking. But here it goes. And I checked. Statute of limitations are done. So yeah. Wow, man. What I'm about to you know, right now I want to play that thing where they go, where you watch Law and Order SVU and they say doo doo doo, and they say the stories and names have been changed. I mean, this is one of those. It really is a crazy story. Okay, so how can I put this? Okay, so I was going to school in the San Fernando Valley, and I had some white friends and black friends that were like kind of whitewashed out in Calabasas. And so every weekend, Friday, Saturday night, if I was bored, wasn't hanging out with anyone in L.A. or the Valley, I'd go out to Calabasas and hang with these students. Well, those kids out there thought I was like DMX to them. I was the blackest and the coolest that they'd ever seen. So whenever I came through, it was like, yo, DC, what do you want to do? You know what I mean? Where do you want to go? You know, and all that. So I don't know. And I still don't even know what the psyche was behind me just, anyway, a little bit of backstory real quick. I've been working since I was 15 and a half. I haven't asked my mother for a dollar since I was 15 and a half. At this point, I'm 17. Every car I've ever gotten, I bought myself. No one's ever put in on a car for me. No one's ever bought me a car. You know, parents will say, hey, you save this much, I'll save that much, and, you know, or I'll match the money that you have and we'll buy you a car. Never got that from either one of my parents. I bought everything that I had. Okay, and I did have some hoopties in school, too. They were buckets and hoopties. I had one car that you drive like 30 miles an hour, and if you hit a dip, the shock was blown on the back right side, and they go, it was the most, oh, man, you could not play that off and be cool if you had a girl in the car. You know what I mean? And so what I would do is, I figured out how to do it. I would roll up real slow, hit like 2 miles an hour, and I hit a dip, and it wouldn't go. So, you know, the things you do to try to look cool in another 17-year-old's eyes is just ridiculous. But anyway, so, So I have my own money. I'm doing my own thing. I'm not starving for money. I have my own car. I'm paying for my own car insurance, my own food, my own clothing. I was living with my mother. You know, obviously, she's, you know, not making me pay rent, but that's because I'm in high school, obviously. But everything else, she's not kicking down anything for me. So I go out there to Calabasas one, and this is maybe, was it Calabasas and Agoura Hills, because we had friends that lived in both cities, and they're kind of neighboring cities, if I remember correctly. So I went out there, and this one night, I don't even know how I got started, to be honest. I'm so ashamed. Okay, let me say this before we get started. I'm really ashamed. Really, really ashamed. In fact, I told my daughter this when she was a teenager. I told her this story. I sat her down. And as I'm telling her the story, she starts giggling and laughing throughout the story. And I'm going, baby doll, whoa, that's not that kind of story. And she goes, but daddy, you're funny. And I said, no, what did I just say was funny? And then she would say something I said. And I'd be like, okay, I see how that's a little funny, but this is serious. And when I was done telling my daughter this story, you know what she looked at me and said? She goes, oh, daddy, that's not that bad. I said, baby doll, and mind you, I'll talk about everything in the end, because I'm sure no one knows where the hell this story is going. I can guarantee you that. Unless you've heard it before, you know, you're a personal friend of mine and you've heard me tell this story, you don't know. So anyway, I go out there and I cannot remember how exactly this got started, but no one had money and we wanted to order pizza. And I think what happened was we ordered the pizza like, oh, man, how did it go down? I think basically, well, I think we got away with something the first time. We got the pizzas for free. That I don't remember how, but the rest of the story, crystal clear. Because the next time, it was more like everybody was expecting for us to get this free pizza. you know, we're dumb high school kids, you know, not thinking about anything other than, hey, we're hungry, let's eat. It's, you know, and all these kids' parents were rich as hell, you know, rich as hell, living in big ass homes. Anyway, so the scheme is they're trying to figure out how to do this. And me being from LA and knowing the hustle and the grind and how to get things done, learning, watching everything that goes on in Los Angeles, because LA is one big hustle. I said, well, what we need to do is let's go to the Valley, San Fernando Valley, the West End, which is right over the hill. We'll find a house that's dark, has no lights on, looks like nobody's home. We'll do a little test run. We'll go up, knock on the door, you know, ring the doorbell, nobody's home. Cool. Step one, done. Step two is order pizza to that house. And then step three, this was 30 years ago, so does anyone remember the steering wheel lock that locked onto the bottom of your steering wheel and it hooked around your brake? Does anyone remember that? I'm hoping someone remembers it. I had one of those. And I remember, you know, playing around with it. If you cranked it, like opened and closed it real fast, it sounded very close to a shotgun. It really did. Like when you cock a shotgun, when you go, it sounded really, really close to it. And so I brought that out, and I said, what do you guys think of this? You know, and I did it, and they went, oh, my God, you know. And we're like, okay, cool. So we'll just hide in the bushes. Okay, so the pizza man shows up. And at the time, we got, like, what? It might have been one large or two larges at the most. We didn't go crazy. Let's say two larges. He comes down this the front walkway, and there's, like, bushes pretty high, maybe four-foot-high bushes on both sides, and we're hiding behind those. He gets about halfway down the walkway, and I crank the thing. I go, drop the blankety-blank pizzas. And this dude, I think he made a mess in his pants. And he dropped the pizzas so fast and threw his hands in the air. And I said, turn around and get in the car and go. And he got in the car. He ran to the car, took off, and he was gone. Okay, so I can't believe I'm telling this. This is just so ridiculously bad. So, look, I know, okay? This is why I'm trying to bare my soul here. You know what I'm saying? I know how bad this is. I know people are sitting there because it's going to get worse, okay? It's going to get worse. And please understand, dopey kid, not 18, stupid as all hell, with too much time on his hands, you know? So the guy skids off. These other kids come out the bushes. They might as well put me on their shoulders and walk me down the dark street, you know. Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray! You know what I mean? They're so happy. Mind you, all we did was get a couple of pizzas. You know what I mean? But we're dopey kids again. So that was done, right? The next weekend I went out there. They said, man, we should do that again. And now it's like one or two more people that were like, let's say there were eight people the first time. The next weekend, there's 10 people there now. And because people start talking and open up their mouths, so the group started getting bigger every week. And the second week, I said, well, let's do it out here. And what we would do is every week, we would just pick a different house in a different neighborhood, make sure no one was home, do the whole deal. The second week, we got, like, three pizzas. The fourth week, we got, like, it was three six-packs of soda and four pizzas. It was crazy. Because we were just getting away with it every time. We got away with it every time. And it was so bad. And each time was the same scenario. The person would freak out, drop the pizza, take off, run, you know, and that was it. we were laughing and clowning and, oh my God, enjoying the spoils, right? So anyway, I'll say on the fifth week, okay? On the fifth week, we choose this house that's up on this winding hill. So it's a street, basically houses on both sides, obviously. And it goes up and it kind of winds around. And I find this house, again, with bushes walking down the walkway. And I think to myself, I mean, this is golden. So, man, so not proud of this. So the guy walks up, and he's got this massive order. First of all, I think it was like six pizzas. And by the way, we never called the same pizza place. We always kept – that was something. At least I had some kind of sense. I never hit the same place twice and never went to the same house twice, you know. I'm like the Lex Luthor of the San Fernando Valley, you know, the West End. Anyway, so the guy comes walking up, and I can tell he's not carrying all the pizzas. And I think he might have had like one or two pizzas, and that I couldn't understand, but in the moment, didn't really care. And so, you know, I do my deal. I take my steering wheel lock and I go, got the blankety blank pizzas. And I do a deep, menacing voice in case you don't know. I put on my Barry White voice. I was romancing the pizza guy for free pizza. Okay, so I crank it and the guy goes, no, a very firm no. And I looked at, like, now at this point, the group has grown to like 20 kids, and we're all strategically in this big front lawn of this massive house. And I look over at the guy next to me and go, what the hell? And I crank it again. I say, drop down every business. You know what I mean? I get all loud and more aggressive, like I'm more erratic. And he goes, I can't remember if he said no even louder or if he went F you. But whatever it was enough for me to go, oh my God, something's wrong. Something's terribly wrong in the situation. And I forgot to tell you this part of the story. I'm going to go back just a little bit. Whenever I would park my car, I would never park my car in front of the house we were doing it. What I would do is I'd park my car like half a block down and on the opposite side of the house that we were doing it at, okay? Everyone can kind of picture that. So now my car is facing downhill on the opposite side of the street. You know, all right, cool. So anyway, I think he did end up saying F you. And it was just a cocky attitude that I had not seen. It was just, whoa, what the hell is going on here? This is new. And he gets to the car, and he turns his car around, and he takes off. And as soon as I see his car, like, at least, like, maybe four or five houses down, like, driving away from us, I go, brake! And I scream, brake. And that was the key for everybody. Just go, get out of there if anything ever went wrong. I hightailed it down in my car. And I had limo tint on my windows all the way around from the passenger all the way around to the other passenger. And then, here I'm dating myself again with this. Remember the cardboard windshield visors? Remember those? Cardboard, right? I had a cardboard window visor. I would stick up and boom, put it up there, even if it was nighttime. Okay. So you can imagine how dark my car is on the inside. So I take off, I'm running downhill. And I'm running like Jesse Owens. I'm blazing. I go to my passenger seat. I already hit the alarm. So by the time I got there, the door's unlocked. I get in my passenger seat. I swear, I'm closing my passenger door, slamming it, basically, but closing it, and I hear, woo, 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 going up the hill. I mean, zooming past me. And I'm like, oh, dookie, right? You know, gotta keep this PG. But I'm like, oh, dookie. And I'm sitting there in the passenger seat, freaking out, panicking. Because now, the consequences have now rolled into my mind. The consequences never rolled into my mind before that. The consequences of being arrested, sitting in jail, having to call my mother and tell her that I was in jail. And not only was I was in jail for stealing pizza. Oh, no. Oh, my God. I mean, I would have told the cop, man, why don't y'all just kill me now? Because, like, forget it. I'm not going home after this. Uh-uh. Set me up a nice bunk in the back. I'll stay here for the rest of my life, or at least until I'm 18, because I cannot go home. Uh-uh. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And so just thinking about how stupid it was for me to do this, because it wasn't, the panic did not hit me until I closed that passenger door and I was going up the hill. I mean, and when I say, like, zooming past me, it had to be at least seven cars. They went, and, you know, those engines are loud when they're hitting uphill and they're gassing it. You know, they're going up, and I'm like, whoa. And I'm sitting, and I got my seat laid down, and I'm flat, and I'm freaking out. So now I raise my head up a little bit, and I look, and I'm like, I'm looking behind me. And I'm so happy that I kind of strategically parked my car where I did, because I was just like, I would have been in such a jam. I would have had to sit there all night until they were gone. You know what I mean? And just starve or just lay there in fear. But what I did was I kind of moved over to the driver's seat, and I had an idea. Now, back in the day, when you took your key out, your steering wheel would lock, okay? So my issue was figure out I had to drive my car manually with no power steering, which isn't really a bad deal, but I was on a hill with the car in front of me not that far away from me, which would have meant it would have been real hard for me to pull away from the thing, from the curb, without hitting the car. But anyway, so what I did was I turned the wheel a lot. And this is manual, no power. And what I do is I stick my key in, and I tap the brake and throw my car in neutral. I mean, I tap it, right? I mean, I leave my foot on it for a hot second maybe. And I drive the car down the hill with no engine, no lights, no nothing. And I'm coasting down this hill, and my brakes are not working, you know, at full potential, you know. So now once I get down like maybe four or five houses, I hit the key, car turns over, pop that son bitch and drive, and man, I drove out of there like a legal, law-abiding citizen. I did not hit the gas and pull a Deuce Hazard. And so now I tell all my boys, I'm done. I'm done. I'm not doing this again. It's a wrap. And they're like, yo, man, but I said, you guys can do it. I said, I'm not doing it anymore. Mm-mm. I'm done. It's a wrap. I'm not even coming out to hang out with you guys anymore. You know, I mean, these corrupt little white kids had corrupted this inner city, innocent union. So I told them, and so I get a phone call maybe a couple of weeks, not a couple of weeks, maybe like about 5 days later. And this dude calls me up and he goes, yo, bro, we're in the newspaper. And I said, what? And he goes, I have the article right here in front of me. And it was a small paper. It wasn't like the LA Times or anything. It was a small paper. And they wrote up an article, and they had us named as the Pizza Bandits. And, oh, my God, they talked about the sting operation. The sting operation for pizza. I was like, what the hell? And, you know, now at this point, when I'm telling my daughter this whole story, she's laughing. She thinks this is the dumbest story ever. And I'm telling her, I'm going, baby, no, I'm not telling you this because I'm proud of it. I'm telling you because idle time, idle minds can get you into trouble. You know what I mean? If you're not around square people that are thinking, you know, hey, we shouldn't do that. That's against the law. You know what I mean? That sometimes you can be the person who persuades others, or others can persuade you into doing some dumb shit that you'll, dumb stuff that you'll later regret, and just isn't worth, just so stupid, so unnecessary. So, I dodged a felony. They actually made it a felony. That's amazing. Amazing to me. It was really something. And I went to the police station. It had to be maybe 15 years later. And I was talking to them about it, and they said, are you for real? And I said, well, you know, I didn't know if my name was in the system or any of that. And they were like, dude, no. Seriously, pizza, bro. And I said, I thought the same thing at 17, but I don't think the same way in my mid-20s, you know, or 30s or whatever it was. But it was really, really one of those things where I just felt like, wow, one of the dumbest things I've ever done. And the embarrassment and stupidity could have just been off the chain. But anyway, so yeah, I talked to the owner of the station today, and we got into a subject about sports. And there is going to be a show, as I think Magic Johnson, former Los Angeles Laker, was the best thing to ever lace up two pairs of shoes. I've been watching basketball since 79, and I have not seen anyone come close to being as good as he was. And that's including Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James. Not to take anything away from LeBron as far as a player, but what Magic did, Magic took a team that was, no one knew their names, and he made them household names. So I'm going to be doing a show in the future about Magic versus Jordan. I already have a YouTube video that's been up for probably 10 years. At least 10 years. And it's a video where it's 15 minutes of me basically stating facts, not opinions, facts about why Magic is so much better of a basketball player than Michael Jordan. And most Bulls fans always fall back on the fact of, well, Jordan has 6 titles and Magic has 5. And quickly, I'm not even going to touch on this, but quickly, every team that Magic beat was a championship team. In other words, every team that Magic beat was a team that had won the championship before. Yeah, that's a championship caliber team. Versus the 6 teams that the Bulls beat, none of them were champions. Not even the first year Lakers. Because the first year Lakers in 1990 that they won, that the Bulls beat the Lakers, that was when Magic had admitted he had AIDS. So anyway, I'm not really sure that's something that, that'd be like me going, I just won a relay race against a guy in a wheelchair. You know what I'm saying? Like, for real? You're bragging about that, bro? You know what I mean? For real? No one would, anyway. So I'm going to be doing a show about that for sure. I also, if anyone wants to call in and refute me, any fans that are Bulls fans, in fact, let me say this. I have lifetime Bull fans, Chicago Bull fans. They wrote me on YouTube and said, yo, dog, I never saw it that way. You stated a lot of good facts. He goes, you got me thinking. I'm not swaying over yet. But you got me thinking. And another dude said, damn, you're right. I didn't see it like that, man. Magic is better. I mean, I turned Bulls fans against Michael Jordan. So anyway, that's going to be a compelling topic. I'm very, very passionate about it. And I can't wait to I can't wait to open that issue up. I don't know how many people that are listening have OCD, or if they're extra clean people or consider themselves to be extra clean. I've been called OCD, and when people tell me that, I take it as a compliment. You know what I mean? It's just, to me, I think about what's dirty, and I don't know. I've never had a woman go, ugh, you're too clean for me. I don't want to mess around with you. You know what I mean? So, anyway. But I want to open up subjects about that type of stuff. I also, how can I say this? I want to talk, and these are future shows. I want to talk about assisted suicides and what the U.S. laws are now. Okay. That'll be a more of a heavy show, and I'll talk about why my opinions are what they are, and if anyone wants to call in the future and talk about it, chop it up, respect your opinion even if you disagree with me. I want to have a future show about religion and the Bible. I want to have a future show about politics and Trump and how he basically corralled the low IQ vote. I really do believe that, and the people that are above, you know, let's say 100, because 101 is not a high IQ, but the people that are above 101 and they voted for Trump, I would say I'm okay with them because they're probably voting for a particular reason rather than just he's a racist and I have to back him. Just like people thought black people were voting for Obama just because he's black. But the one problem I have with that is every time before that I voted for a white man and no one called me a racist. So why am I a racist when I vote for the first black man? Anyway, it really is amazing how some people see things, and I just feel like with this, you know, voting coming up and everything, I'm going to really try not to be political, because I don't want to be a show that's looked at like on Fox News, where I'm just anti-Trump and the people that don't feel the same way I feel, they're irritated. You know what I'm saying? It's just, this is a fun show. You know, I put some thought into this show, and I thought my last show was a little bit heavy. And I said, you got to put some smiles and tell some jokes and get people laughing, or at least a little bit of levity. And I wanted people to kind of see a different side. Because I'm not that guy that's poor me, poor me, poor me, you know. But there's so many stories. But I think I'm going to, we're in the last 15 minutes, and I have a story that most people love, and you might have heard it. Maybe you haven't. It was my first night working for Anna Nicole Smith. I was a bodyguard. And I show up. Well, first of all, I had a white limo friend driver call me up on the phone. And he said, hey, DC, you working tonight? And I said, no. And he said, oh, wow, okay. So I'm driving Anna Nicole. I said, cool, man. First time? He goes, yeah. He goes, cool. And then he's like, not saying anything. I said, so what's up? Well, I said, spit it out, dude. What's going on? He goes, she asked if I knew any big black guys that would bodyguard her tonight. And I said, dude, what's the problem? I'm big and I'm black. What's the issue? And he goes, no, man, I didn't want you to think I was. I said, dude, come on, man. You know I'm not like that. I'm not sensitive, racially sensitive and all that stuff. In fact, I call myself black. I don't call myself African-American. I didn't tell him this, but I'm letting everyone know. I feel like an African-American is someone who comes here from Africa and they get citizenship. If I can look at every white person that I know and call them white, or, you know, look at every Mexican and call them Mexican, you know, in other words, I don't call them, you know, the white people, I don't call them European Caucasians. You know what I'm saying? So why would I need to be called African American? If I look at you and call you white, you can look at me and call me black. In fact, I'm a man who's proud of who he is and what I was born. And to be honest with you, the only other race, if I was born any other race other than Samoan, I probably would have killed myself by now. I never want to be a white man, an Asian man, a Latino man, none of that. I love being black. And the reason I'm okay with being Samoan is I met so many Samoans in my life that make me look small. And I'm 6'3 and 280. And these dudes are like 6'5 and 400, you know what I mean? And they're humble and they're nice and they're just great guys. And I love that. You know, my attitude is always, if you're nice to me, I'll give nice back to you. But if you're going to harass me and be nasty to me, I'm not going to smile back. You know what I mean? You can't slap me and I'm turning around and go, ooh, can I have a fresh one? You know what I mean? Like, no, it doesn't work that way. But anyway, getting back to Anna, and I also want to talk about, there's a subject, that's really near and dear about the school system and how they basically, teach you about Malcolm, about, Martin Luther King, but they, you know, you never hear about Malcolm X, never. But anyway, that's for another show. But anyway, so I show up, call my buddy up. I go, hey, man, you got to show up suited and booted. You know, this is celebrity first time, clean. And he knew what that meant, you know, clean shave, tight, looking good. So we show up and walk into her foyer, and this is when she was filming her e-show. So when I walk in the room, I notice there's, I mean, everyone in the room is gay or lesbian, clearly. And a camera crew. And so I hadn't had much experience with gay people up until this point in my life, other than my family, you know what I mean? But my dad kind of kept me away from that side, you know. But, I mean, I knew what they were, who they were, but I didn't have any, like, interaction with that side of the family. My dad's dead now, so I can't ask him why. But I would assume, you know, he felt like, you know, he thought there was an influence there, you know. So anyway, so we show up, and this, and Anna's first words, we walk into the room, Anna's first words are, you two bodyguards, don't put your life on the line for me tonight. And I fell out laughing. I mean, how do you respond to that? Are you two the bodyguards going to put your life on the line for me tonight? You know what I mean? I mean, personality just oozing out of her. And I fell out laughing. Because I was just like, what the hell? Yeah, that's us. And I said, you know, I'll call him Jimbo. That's Jimbo in NBC. And she walks up, and she shakes Jimbo's hand. And she moves over to me, and I stick my hand out. And she leans in and kisses my lips. Now, mind you, she doesn't just kiss me like mom. She lays her, like she covers my lips with her lips. Okay, so my lips are inside her mouth. Okay, oh my God. She leaves wetness around my goatee. And I'm like, now, is anyone remembering I just said I'm like OCD? Well, I just said this no more than 10 minutes ago. And she left this, and I'm like, I'm frozen. I'm like, what did she just do? I don't know her. We're not in a sexual situation. What the hell's going on? So she walks away, and my boy goes, dog, she really likes you. And I was like, what the hell was that? You know? So I say, Anna, is there a bathroom I can use? And yes, so I go to the bathroom and I stick a hand towel over my suit and you know, over my tie and my collar. And I start putting soap in my mouth with my fingers. I'm brushing my teeth with my fingers. It's crazy. It's crazy. And almost felt like the scene from Ace Ventura when he found out the woman he had kissed was formerly a man that still had his penis. I don't know if anyone remembers that movie, but, you know, there's a scene where the next thing you see, he's like got a toothbrush out and he's unloading the whole tube onto the one toothbrush. It's like a mound of toothpaste. And then the next thing, he's sticking like 20 pieces of bubble gum in his mouth and his jaws out. It looks like he's chewing on baseballs. You know what I mean? And then the last scene is he's in the shower butt naked and he's like crying, like hunched down in the corner, like, you know, like, and you know, it just reminds you of any scene in a movie where a woman's been raped and, you know, she's going through that whole thing. But it was so goofy, that movie. Anyway, I'm in there washing everything that I could. I came out. That's it. So now there's this tiny little white gay dude. And when I say tiny, I'm talking like 5'3", maybe a 110, 120, soaking wet. And he's been over the couch with a black dude from the camera crew putting the mic in the small of his back for the show. And as soon as I come back in the room, he announces, this little gay guy announces to the whole room, he goes, oh, I sure would like that DC back here putting his mic on me. And everybody in the room fell out laughing. And I'm like, I'm standing there looking like I'm taking a picture for Ice Cube's album. You know what I mean? You know how he always has the mean mugging. And I'm like, what the hell? And my friend knew I wasn't okay with that. Everybody else was laughing. They think it's funny. And he covers his mouth, my friend. He goes, dog, don't mess this up. It's good money, man. And I said, and I put both my hands over my face. I said, but this little dude is talking to me like I'm a bitch, bro. You know what I mean? And he goes, relax, man. Breathe in, breathe out. Anyway, so we get in the limousine. My buddy, I sit down, and it sits next to me. My buddy sits with his back to the limo driver on that little bench. Yeah. This little gay guy gets in, bent over, and he grabs my knee. Now, mind you, I'm not tripping. I didn't trip. Okay? And you bend over, you lose your balance. Okay, whatever, right? But now he moves his hand from up to my low quad muscle thigh. And I go, ooh. I'm like, what is this dude doing? You know what I mean? And then 2 seconds later, he moves his hand up again. Now he's full-blown, like mid-thigh muscle. And how do I say this without being, if I'm hanging a little bit to the left, it could be a problem if he makes another move, okay? So I'm in panic mode in my mind, and all this happens at the same time, okay? So what I do is I grab his wrist, I squeeze his tiny little wrist. His wrist was the size of a woman, right? I grab his wrist, I squeeze. At the same time, he goes, ah! Like that, right? He squealed. Oh, he squealed. And at the same time, over his squeal, I said, let me help you to your seat. I said it real loud, you know what I mean? So he goes, ah, you know, and I'm squeezing him, and he goes, let me help you to your seat. So I take him, I sit him next to my boy with his back to the bench, you know, back to the limo driver on the same bench as my boy. Man, I swear to you, before I come back and sit down where I was, before my ass hits the seat, this dude has done a baseball slide, and he is hip to hip right next to me. And he's in my personal space. I'm talking like his mouth is like he's leaning in on my left side. Okay? His mouth is like, what, 3 inches from my face while he's saying, ooh, DC, you're so handsome. And Anna thinks this is funny as hell. Again, the whole crowd is lesbian and gay. They think it's just the funniest thing to see this little gay dude, gay white dude hitting on this big black dude. You know what I mean? And, you know, they're going on and on and on. And I'm basically saying, like, thank you. You know, and he said, do you have kids? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, how many? I had two at the time. I said, seven. And my boy starts laughing and shit. And I'm like, I'm giving him eyes like, dude, don't laugh. This is not funny. You know what I mean? And then, you know, he's like, he's just, the whole, we're in the Hollywood Hills. And we're going down this windy road. And anyone that's driven in the Hollywood Hills understands what I'm talking about. But you're just going down, down, down. And it takes you forever to get out of there. And finally, the other gay guy that's sitting next to the guy that's harassing me leans forward, looks me in the eye. Okay, I'm going to repeat that. This guy leans forward, looks me in the eye, and he goes, hello, married. And he, like, emphasizes his left ring finger. And he's looking at me. And I said, you talking to me? And he goes, yes. And I said, okay, I didn't think this needed to be said, but let me pronounce it. I'm not gay. I will never be gay. I like women. In fact, I love women. And being gay, doing anything gay, is not on the books for me ever in life. And then the little gay guy that was flirting with me, he turns around and looks at the gay guy and he goes, oh, honey, stop it. I'm just messing with DC. This dude was married. He sat here and watched his supposed wife or whatever hit on me the whole time. Didn't say a word. And I'm going, that was, I mean, like, he hit his threshold, in other words. That was too much for him. So, anyway, it just kind of, the whole night, the dude flirted with me. It was crazy. And by the end of the night, we did a group picture. And he said, I need everybody's email address. And came to me. And, you know, and I'd already had my business card, which had my email address on it. So it's not like I could give a fake email. So I was like, yeah, okay, it's on here. Yeah, take that. So he wrote me this email when he sent me the pictures. He wrote me this email and he goes, thank you, DC, for being so nice and polite, cordial. You really could have been mean and hurt my feelings, but you didn't, and I appreciate it. I know I went above and beyond, and you're just so good looking. And all of a sudden, I was just like, this thing's going on again in the email, you know what I mean? As I'm reading it, but he goes, well, thank you. It was a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much. And here are the pictures. I promise you, blah, 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 blah. And that was it. But anyway, and I have a lot more stories that I could tell about Anna. I've worked for Anna for a while. And I have a lot of, she's the best celebrity I ever worked for in my entire life. And I worked for a lot of them. But she was just the nicest. And she made my hard job because she was so nice. But anyway, I've been told that I need to get a song over the next few shows, figure out what song I can play, because people love hearing music come in to music and go out to music. You know, I'm so crazy. I think people are so stuck on my deep melodious voice, my Barry White. and if you don't know me that well, I'm just a goofball. I can be serious, but I am a goofball, and I admit it, and I wear that proudly. I love DC and Marvel movies. I could do a whole show on that. Swear to you. Oh, a whole show. I have so much I can say. Those movies are awesome. Amazing. But anyway, I digress. I love the freedom I have with this show. I just need to technically get everything down because I swear I don't like not getting things right. And I'll put myself on blast by saying this. The opening of the show did not go the way I wanted it to or the way it should have. And again, so anyway, but I really do appreciate the patience, and I appreciate the audience. And if you hung in here this long, I want to tell everyone thank you. I appreciate your time. And you can send me suggestions if you want any other issues. I'm open to anything. You guys have a great night.
Mystique Entertainment, a global network for your top source for live streaming continuous content, such as music, film, trade shows, lifestyle and wellness, and reality shows. For business inquiries, contact Mystique Entertainment. Info: Mystique Entertainment at gmail.com.